going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Eckert, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. Happy Tuesday. It is Tuesday, December 10th. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com for the next hour. As this hour is underway, it's the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hello, Mick.
Hello, Patrick. How are we doing?
Good, good, good.
Good.
Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts, we're underway this hour on Flames Talking. I wanted to kick off this hour maybe looking at some of the positive trends for the Flames of late, because I think it's fair to say we've focused a lot on some negative trends over the last, you know, pregame on Sunday, postgame on Sunday, and then on Monday's show. I'd like to, because there have been some, they can't score, 25 straight games without scoring more than three goals. Penalty kill has been rough.
Road woes.
They've lost eight in a row on the road. There's been some rough things, but there has been plenty of positive over the last little bit as well. So I'm going to balance that a little bit. And maybe let's start with Martin Pospisil, because I think that we've seen him slowly start to get closer to the guy that Flames fans really came to appreciate last season. I think that was most on display, most emphatic on Sunday against Dallas, where I thought he was one of Calgary's best players in that game. I know they lost it 6-2, but I thought he played really well, led that game with eight hits, and was a real force on the forecheck. I don't know if you're seeing the same thing, but over the last three, four games, I've seen a whole lot more of that menacing Pospisil on the forecheck. That includes a frustrating interference penalty that led to a goal in the third period of the St. Louis game. So that also comes along with the Martin Pospisil
experience.
But I have seen him look a whole lot more like himself on the forecheck. You know, there have been times earlier this year, whether he was playing center or wing, where it felt like he geared down on the forecheck, looked even tentative and hesitant on the forecheck. I haven't seen that as much over the last little bit, and to me, that is a definite positive.
No, he's playing a more direct game from my perspective. The word I use is he's peskier now than he was earlier in the season, and the eight hits against the Dallas Stars can serve as a little bit of a testament to that. I do wonder how much it got him between the ears on a couple of different levels. One, starting the season down the middle and experimenting as a center for the first time in his NHL career and first time in a while where he had the responsibilities of having to put forth the 200-foot game, maybe not so much play that direct straight line wing position where you just go in, crash, bang, and then work your tail off to get back. There's a lot more nuance that goes into playing down the middle. And then, of course, the penalty trouble. And I don't know if he's even shed the joke yet, but it's like death, taxes, and an offensive zone penalty from Pospisil can be the three things that you can count on. And in my opinion, he's done a better job of late of not being the guy that sort of sets the team back a little bit. There have been a couple of instances still of late where you wish he could have maybe not have taken that kind of penalty. But by and large, for the most part, he's been much improved in that sort of area. And it just, but that can also pull away from your game when you're taking a couple offensive zone penalties that are either ill-timed or lazy or aren't necessarily the fabric of your game, but are occurring in situations where you would be eager on the forecheck. That can also make you hesitate a little bit. And I think over the course of the past couple of games, and I feel like Coach Ryan Huska would agree based on the number of shifts and the number of ice time Pospisil has got over the last four or five games, that Pospisil is back to playing the sort of style that we saw for most of last season, and that's been key.
Here, this was head coach Ryan Huska Tuesday morning in Nashville ahead of Calgary's game against the Predators and was asked about what he's seen from Martin Pospisil.
He's getting back to his game. You know, we had a lot of different trials with him in the middle of the ice this year, and yeah, I thought he did a good job there, but it took a little bit away from what makes him a really effective player. So it's the speed that he plays with and his ability to get in on the forecheck, and we saw that last game. And when he's doing it consistently, he opens room for the other two guys. So that's our hope, that trio is going to find some chemistry. And a lot of their success, I believe, falls at Marty's feet because of the way he plays the game.
That first goal being the specific example of it?
Yeah. Totally. Like, he was hard on a forecheck, even though that's in the neutral zone. He went through his check, and there's a loose puck, and then the two skilled guys do what they do best.
That's what Pospisil needs to do to remain in the NHL, right? Like, I mean, him as a center, I think we wanted it to work, but for now, experiment on hold. Wasn't anywhere near as effective, and I think the flip-flopping between center and the wing took away from his effectiveness as well.
So, agreed.
It's like, okay, let's move him back to the wing. Finally moved him back onto a spot with Nazem Kadri. Those two guys were so good with one another last year. I think that's helped. And I think just finally, Pospisil has gotten out of his own head a little bit. I think there was a lot, and I don't blame him. That's not a criticism at all. I think most guys in his situation that would be in a similar spot where you're like, okay, it's not translating the way it did last year. I'm thinking too much down the middle. Then you're on the wing again, and you're like, well, am I going to stay here, or am I going back to playing center? At times, I think he was trying too hard to not take penalties, and agreed. that was leading to him, I think, getting behind the play, and to him then, because he was behind it, taking more penalties, in fact, not just the aggression ones. Like, I honestly didn't mind that interference call against St. Louis, because that was Pospisil buzzing around the offensive zone and being kind of a menace. And sometimes when you do that, you're going to take penalties. But it's the ones where he's hooking or tripping and he's behind the play that were really starting to frustrate people and frustrate this coaching staff. Well, if you want this guy to forecheck hard, if you want this guy to be the type of player who finishes his checks, and you saw Jamie Benn's face after he got dumped into the boards in the first period on Sunday. He was not a hat. He's like,
less than impressed.
He's like, who are you, 7'6"? Like, do you know who I am? Like, and I know they got the last laugh. They won the game. I grant you that. But that's the Martin Pospisil the Flames need to see more of. And it feels like maybe it's clicked again in his head how he can be that guy on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, I think it's fair to accuse him a little bit, and this kind of goes back to him playing down the middle, but thinking the game instead of playing the game. And all last season, all we saw was Pospisil play on instinct. And again, even the last season, there was a lot of discussion about how do you coach some of the instinct out of him, because there would be ill-timed hits or ill-timed penalties that would cost the team. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of buzz inside this market and outside of this market about, is Martin Pospisil a dirty player, or how do you teach a rookie where the line is? So you've got all that from last season. You've got the move to the middle this season, and then trying to find his way back on the wing when he's still taking some offensive zone penalties. It's been tough for Martin Pospisil from a mental standpoint to just go out and play free. But to me, that's when he's at his best, and sometimes you have to take some of the bad with the good that you want from the style that he plays. But again, look back to Dallas, 8 hits, one directly led to a goal. Other times they're going to have benefits throughout the game when you're not, again, the expectation isn't 8 hits a game, but when you have a defense corps looking over their shoulder every single time they're on a puck retrieval, that makes the other team move the puck just that much slower and opens up that much more ice for your line mates and your teammates. That's the Martin Pospisil that we saw last season that made him so such an impactful rookie for the Flames.
Nazem Kadri was talking about him Tuesday morning as well, and really liking what he's seeing from Martin Pospisil.
Pospisil, he's an easy guy to read off of, and you know, that's why I enjoy playing with him, because you always know kind of where he's going to be and what he's looking to do, and it's easy to you know, to kind of predict and put his line mates in better positions to score. So again, last game probably could have had 2 or 3 at least, but you know, we're going to look to continue that.
So more of what we've seen the last 2-3 games from Pospisil, and a whole lot less. We're talking about his struggles. This text came in. was a little surprised at because we're sitting here praising Pospisil, but this text says, guys, not to be the bad guy here, but we seem to be going again with Pospisil, not unlike Sam Bennett. Let's just trade Pospisil to Florida for a third-round pick and watch him turn into another Sam. Well, that's not what we're talking about at all. In fact, we're saying what we're seeing from Pospisil is finally this season what we saw from him last year, and now I think there's a good feel that maybe it's going in the right direction. This is what you want to see. I got criticized by somebody recently. I don't remember when it was, but saying like, oh, if I think it was on the text line. It was like, and I just didn't respond. I was like, whatever. No, it was on Twitter. I was just like, okay, whatever. But somebody was like, yeah, you know what? If Pospisil was taking penalties like Jonathan Huberdeau was, Steinberg would be saying healthy scratch him, but he'll take a bullet for Jonathan Huberdeau. I was like, okay, well,
that was my burner account.
Hey, that's false. Well, then your burner account was false. But I think most of the criticism that was being levied on Pospisil earlier this year was fair. But I also think when a guy starts to turn a corner, you got to underline when it's happening. And if you've been a bit of a scapegoat for a good chunk of a season, like I think Pospisil was, he was one of the guys that you would point to and say, you know, here, the Flames needed certain guys to take steps and, you know, maybe this guy isn't taking that step. Well, the last 3-4 games, he's looked like he has. So that to me is a real positive and something that I think if you're the Flames, you want to see continue.
Yeah, and it's less about goals, assists, points with Pospisil. It's more about the way he's playing and what he's able to do in terms of freeing up his other two line mates. You need him to be a pesky. You need him to be on the forecheck. You need him to be physical, execute the strongest elements of his game to his fullest abilities and capabilities, and you get into a situation where, again, regardless of goals, assists, points, he's contributing positively again to the Flames like we saw him do a year ago.
Speaking of Nazem Kadri, who we just heard from, also think that that's been a positive. Kadri and Huberdeau in 10 periods together have combined for their last 10 periods. They started in the third period against Pittsburgh and have then played the last three games. Combined for 9 points, 5 from Huberdeau, 4 for Kadri. I know that's not like mind-blowing, but for how this team has struggled to score, for how those guys have struggled to produce this year, that's a positive, A. But B, you add on top of that that Kadri and Huberdeau have not worked. They've been like oil and water together on a 5-on-5 line for a good chunk of their time. That's 2+ seasons now they've been members of the Flames. That's a real positive development as well. You've got your $10.5 million forward. You've got your $7 million forward. You've got two guys that are the highest paid players on the team. And for the longest time, you couldn't put them on the same line together because it just didn't work. What we've seen the last 3+ games has been a nice positive omen. Hopefully that can continue for the Flames as well, because that could be a real nice step forward in their offensive struggles.
Yeah, again, I need a little bit more of a sample size, but it's encouraging that they managed to at least put 10 periods together where they've looked like the formation of what would be undisputed number one line for the Calgary Flames. We've talked about it a lot over the course of the past couple seasons where, all right, who are you listing as line one today? Who's line two? Who's line three? And it's basically been the deployment in practice or in warm-ups. Okay, that line took the first drill, so we're going to put them as number one today. But when you have Kadri and Huberdeau finally clicking to the degree that they have over the course of the last 3 1/3 games, it's a positive step. And you need, again, you mentioned that's $17.5 million tied up in two players. You need, but even more importantly, you expect them to be the guys to drive the bus offensively for the Calgary Flames. And as it stands through 28 games, those are the two names atop the leaderboard for the Calgary Flames in terms of points. Jonathan Huberdeau's first in goals. Number two, Nazem Kadri at 8. So you need your highly paid forwards to deliver performances that aren't just, okay, well, maybe they can get it going or maybe they can get along together. You need to see them produce when putting together. And tip of the cap, it hasn't worked in the past. We've seen it. It's like you mentioned, oil and water. But for whatever reason, this time, whether it's subtle adjustments in Huberdeau's game, whether it's catching two guys that are on the upswing in terms of the ebbs and flows of a season, whatever the reason is, put them together and keep them there as long as they can continue this sort of trend that they're on.
The Mick made a really good point, or a really interesting point, good and interesting, on Sunday's postgame show where I asked her about Kadri and Huberto, and she talked about, you know, the way that, that Huberto's kind of changed his mindset a little bit in terms of the way he's playing, the way he's going to the net, the way that he is really made that a big part of his game, and maybe his more willingness to, and this is not a criticism calling Huberto a perimeter player in the past, because he was a really dangerous perimeter player. Like, that was where he was doing his best work, and it wasn't
where all his damage came from.
It wasn't because he was afraid to go to the hard areas. It was just that it was working, and especially on that Florida team with how much of a rush group they were, his work on the outside to get pucks to more dangerous areas onto sticks of players there really worked. It hasn't translated in Calgary, so we've seen him going to tougher areas a whole lot more. You know, the goal that he scored against Dallas, a little bit different. That's a rush goal, but a lot of Huberto's goals have been right in and around the crease where he's battling, where a puck goes off of, yeah, his shoulder or his shin pad or whatever. And also, I take a look at two of the more recent crucial power play goals the Flames have scored. The power play goal that Kevin Ball scored against Columbus to seal that one. It was still very much in reach until Ball made it 2-0 with less than 2 minutes to go. Who's right there in front of Elvis Merzlikins, taking his eyes away? Jonathan Huberto. And then before that, in Detroit, the only point the Flames got on that road trip was the overtime loss in Detroit. They don't get a single point out of that if Huberto doesn't take Cam Talbot's eyes away on a late power play to allow Connor Zeri to walk in and score. And so that is another real positive, is that, you know, I think Huberto has changed his mindset a little bit in terms of how he's going about his business, especially at 5-on-5. And I think that's maybe been a little bit, or possibly could be a little bit more of a fit with Kadri than maybe it was before.
Well, and you like to see that out of Huberto for one simple fact. He's not a small body. He's listed at 6'1". This might be the only time I've ever disagreed on the wrong end of an NHL statistic for height, where I think he's closer to 6'2", comes in at 200 pounds. Like, he can battle. He's got strength. He can be at that net front position. And his ability to work pucks in tight spaces works great along the boards or if you're behind the net and things like that. But in puck battles, too, when you're getting a second or third chance opportunity in front of the net, or to your point, if you're simply trying to take the goalie's eyes away, that's valuable real estate for Jonathan Huberto to be in, because he is so effective in positioning his body to protect pucks. It works the other way as well, to box out opponents so you can get pucks coming in off of goaltenders as well. So yeah, Jonathan Huberto with the net front is something I would like to continue to see more of.
It's been a real nice fit. Even on the power play, like I'm liking it. And one of the things that we've talked about, this, not only are the Flames having a difficult time scoring, and you know, there's been the 25 straight games without scoring more than three goals, but it's not like they're getting goalied, right? It's not like you're like, oh man, another insane game.
How could this happen?
No, like, they're not generating much either, and they're having a really hard time. And I don't really expect this to change dramatically at any point this year. They're having a really hard time getting from the outside to the inside with the puck. So one way you can change that, one way you can maybe be a little more effective offensively and make things a little bit easier, a little bit more difficult rather, on opposing goalies, is get more players to the net. If you're having a hard time getting the puck to the middle of the ice, which they have been, well, at the very least, you can get more players in. And so Huberto has done that. I think Pospisil showed that a lot against Dallas, and he's been a little bit more effective at that. Zeri's been going hard to the net. Like, more of that, even if they don't have the puck, could be a way to help generate a little bit more offense as well. So that is a little bit of a positive, too.
Well, again, we talk about Pospisil on the forecheck wearing out the defense on the other side a little bit, or at least making them move the puck a little bit slower because they've got to better evaluate where that's coming in. Grinding defenses down by always trying to force your way to the net fatigues the defense. It takes a lot of energy to battle against somebody, and this is going to be true for the forwards trying to get to the net, but it's just as true for defensemen trying to clear the front of the net. It's a taxing job. If you've ever spent even 10 seconds battling an NHLer, which I've done a few times, not active NHLers, but even post-Apex NHLers and just scrimmages and whatnot, it is absolutely horrendous to have to sort of have any sort of battle against those guys. And so if you're directing more bodies towards the net, that is a lot of taxation on defenses and trying to clear the front of the net, trying to clear lanes for the goalie to see. So again, all these little things can add up to help contribute, and they're not the things that make the highlight reels. They're not things that you even typically notice every single time they're happening, but there's just so many little things, games within the games and battles inside of games, where if you can get somebody for just one moment off of their game, it can create something for a line mate or a teammate to try and facilitate a little bit more offense, because certainly haven't seen it.
Couple more positives. We're going through some positive trends. 10 power play goals in their last 10 games. Like, that, not in garbage time, is something that I think, you, even though their power play stunk against Dallas, it had been really good prior to that. The 9 games prior, they obviously went 0-4 against the Stars. But prior to that, they had 10 power play goals in 9 games. Do I think this power play is going to score 10 every 10-game segment? Probably not. But they've looked a whole lot more dangerous since a couple of changes were made. The units were more balanced out. They went from having a clear 1 and a 2 unit to having 2 more balanced units. And we talked about the move of getting Huberdeau into the net front area as well. Those are two things that have really helped this power play. And while the 5-on-5 play, the 5-on-5 offense continues to be very, very punchless, the power play looks a whole lot more dangerous. And even though they didn't score against Dallas and didn't look very good against Dallas, I can tell you the perception for me was, and it's been a while since I could say this, was, oh, Flames power play, they've got a really good opportunity to turn the momentum here. Last year down the stretch, like, doesn't really matter because it was garbage time. So in meaningful hockey, I can't remember the last time. Well, I can. It was during the 21-22 season. So it's been a couple of seasons since you've been able to say, oh, Flames have got a power play. Let's see what they can do. Let's see if they can wrestle back momentum here. It feels like the way it's going right now outside of the Stars game, it is going in that direction, which is a positive too.
Well, in the first 18 games of the season, it was such a momentum killer to the point like, oh, whoever's playing the Flames should just take a whole bunch of penalties because they seem to generate momentum off it, and the Flames hadn't been able to do much. Well, in the past 10 games, as you mentioned, 33.3% on the power play. And we're not talking about an insignificant little sample set. Like, we're talking an eighth of the season. Mm-hmm. That is a top 5 power play over the past 10 games for the Flames. And that is significant. It's also sort of puzzling to a degree where you finally get the power play going. You mentioned the 5-on-5 struggles to score. The fact that they've been able to almost 180 their power play and still haven't cracked that. I know we're trying to talk about positive things here. My apologies. The fact that they haven't been able to get north of 3 goals with a power play that literally slots number 5 in the NHL since November 19th.
Tells you how much they've struggled.
But again, even when they're not scoring on the power play, it feels a whole lot more like they're generating momentum in a positive manner as opposed to just handing the puck back to the opposition and going, well, congratulations, you killed off that minor. Now it's time for you to get rolling again.
Yeah, and again, like it's kind of bizarro land. They went from having a very poor power play and, you know, one of the league's top third penalty kills for the last couple of years to a power play that's much better and one of the league's worst penalty kills. It's been that's a very bizarro switch.
Yeah.
It's what we've seen this year, without question.
26th overall, the penalty kill in that same 10-game stretch.
And aren't they big picture? Aren't they 30th or something like that right now?
I don't have big picture right in front of me. Give me 36 seconds.
I got you. We all know the penalty kill has struggled mightily. They are 28th. They did go up a little bit after the Dallas game to 72.4% on the penalty kill. So, and funny enough, Nashville best penalty kill on the penalty killing team in the league, 87.9. That's Calgary's opponent on Tuesday night. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you. This hour of Flames Talk coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, usually on Wednesdays, we say hello to this next gentleman, but things all jumbled around the last couple of weeks, and we didn't, because of Four Nation stuff last week, didn't even get the opportunity to chat with our regular Wednesday conversation, Jonathan Davis of NHL Network and VSiN Sports. And so Today on a Tuesday, we say hello to our Pacific Division insider. Jonathan Davis joins us right now to spin us around this division. Hello, JD. How we doing?
Pat, we're doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. It's always good to have you on. There's been a lot happening in this Pacific Division. We had a big trade involving the division with a rather significant move with the New York Rangers, which we'll get to. Lots to get to, and we got some red hot teams, and maybe we'll start with one of them, the red hot Vegas Golden Knights. They are absolutely rolling right now.
They are, and Pat, I mean, for me, the best team in definitely in the division, and arguably in the conference. And they're healthy. I mean, top to bottom, I don't think you can. There's just not a better team that I've watched, and that game, on the weekend against Dallas, the 3-2 game. Was highly entertaining. And having Mark Stone back in the lineup, and it was interesting, listening to Bruce Cassidy before the game, and they're asking him, well, where do you see Mark Stone making the biggest impact for this team upon his return? And he said the power play. And lo and behold, it's two power play goals. Stone was a factor on both. He had an assist on one of the two. What it does to the end. And for anybody who thinks the Vegas Golden Knights want a hard, hide Mark Stone on IR so they can save him to the playoffs. Huh. You're crazy.
Yeah, he's back now, so I guess that kind of ruins that that narrative, hey? And the one thing we know about Mark is the way he plays, and he's had injury issues for the last 6-7 years. The way he plays, sometimes he's going to find himself on the shelf, but nobody can ever make the argument that the Vegas Golden Knights are better off without him in the lineup. And they need him. He makes an impact. No doubt about that. And earlier in the year, JD, we were talking a lot about how good Vegas was at home for good reason. But, we're talking about how they weren't able to get the job done on the road. And even that has started to trend in a better direction.
Yeah, it's like what, three of the last four games on the road, they've come away with victories. And so, yes, they've started to figure it out. Now, okay, you can question some of their opponents on the road. They haven't been easy. They've been some of the, look, they beat Ottawa and they had to fight tooth and nail in that Ottawa game to win. But, yeah, look, they're winning on the road. And for them right now, the W's, I think from a psychological standpoint, you could put for now that stigma aside. And it's very bizarre this year to see the splits. And, we see it in your city. We see it in Vancouver. We see it with the New Jersey Devils, who can only win on the road and don't play very well at home. And Carolina wins at home, can't win on the road. So it has been very crazy this year.
And as you said, they've got Stone back. Pretty healthy group in Vegas. What, Zach Whitecloud, the only injury they're dealing with right now?
I feel a guy, your only injury on the blue line. So, yeah, the loss of Whitecloud, far less impactful, not to minimize what he can do or what he does for this team. But, earlier, they had games where they were missing both Theodore, they were missing Stone, or not Stone, Petrangelo back there. Whitecloud's a little easier to replace. It's a very, very deep group, to say the least.
And kind of right there with them right now when it comes to a team that's rolling are the team that you are kind of most familiar with right there in SoCal. Tell us about the LA Kings and this 5-game run they're on.
Well, Pat, I've said to you for weeks, I don't know what to make of this team. I have to, you have to give them credit for the fact that, it's been 8 of the last 9 games that they've given up 2 goals or less. That's darn good. And you look at some of the teams they've beaten, and they knocked off the Jets at home. They knocked off the Dallas Stars. And I will say, though, in that Dallas game that they were down 2-0 and 1-3-2, I mean, even Jim Hiller said after the game, we didn't play that well. And I never thought LA really didn't play that well, but they found a way to get a victory. And here's something that's absolutely freaked me out when I was going through the numbers, Pat. I hate having to do any type of math work. But LA this year, when they score exactly 3 goals, they're 5-1. From a hockey standpoint, they're 5-0-1, I think it is. And when they score 3 or more goals, they're 14-0-2. So wow. I mean, that's darn impressive for LA, for any team, to put up those kind of numbers. And so, you know, your team like the Islanders tonight that they're going to face, you know that you can't, you know, the numbers will tell you better not give up more than two, because your chances of winning aren't great. Now, the one thing that the LA Kings face tonight, not only do they face the Islanders, but they're dealing with a trend that has been a killer for six other teams. LA is the seventh, but teams this year following a loss to the Minnesota Wild, or win, following a win against the Minnesota Wild, who LA beat in their game, their last game before heading out on this seven-game road trip, was the Minnesota Wild. And I shared that with Jim Hiller, and I'm wondering if he has shared that with his team and his coaching staff as well. But yeah, 1-7 are teams after beating the Minnesota Wild. That's what LA's up against tonight, along with the Islanders, who are playing some better hockey of late. I mean, they're coming off back-to-back wins. You know, Sorokin was really good over the weekend. They really, they got badly outplayed by Ottawa, but they found a way to win that game. But for LA, you know, the road's been, their home and road splits have, especially the goalie, like your good buddy David Rittich. I mean, this, talk about Jekyll and Hyde. His numbers at home, Pat, huh. I think it's a 1.54 goals against average. You know, his save percentage is in the 900s. He gets on the road, and it's like, oh, my God. You know, he, I don't know what happens to him, but the goals against average balloons over three. The save percentage is below 900. 11 of his 15 games this year, Pat, he's given up two or less. The four games that he hasn't are all on the road. It's 3-7 to San Jose. It's 6 to Vegas, and it's 4 to Toronto in a game that he only lasted two periods.
Sounds like Calgary's goaltending. Really good on home ice, and then the numbers are much, much different and much, much worse on the road. We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He is our Pacific Division insider and more from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. You always get some good numbers and some good betting trends thrown into our conversations with JD as well. Speaking of goaltending, let's move to Vancouver. And for the first time this season, Thatcher Demko is in the lineup.
I mean, it's got a huge boost for the Canucks. And, you know, you kind of wonder, I mean, Pat, I think we've seen it, and more so with forwards who come back. Not too, you know, it's not a lot of times, you know, a little rare for goalies, but a lot of times when you get a star player come back, everybody's just kind of going, okay, we're in a great spot tonight. And I do wonder what it's going to be like for Vancouver, thinking, you know, hey, we've got our number one goalie back. How do they react to it? I'm sure they're going to be excited. Do they get too overconfident? But look, this is a great thing for the Canucks, and maybe it'll help turn around their fortunes at home, because, you know, they haven't been very good at home. And Demko has had his numbers against the Blues are okay. But absolutely, sure, a big boost to get him back, and to know that they've got now Demko and Lankinen, they're in a really good spot.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. You know, when with JT Miller, I'm not clear. I know he was on the ice today, Pat. I've been kind of in and out today. Was it just Miller being on the ice, or is there an expectation that he was playing?
As far as I know, it was just him being back on the ice for the first time.
Okay,
That he did take part in morning skate, but it didn't sound like he was going to play tonight. But we will keep our eye on that. Didn't sound like he was going to play, though.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Thank you for clarifying.
You are welcome. And they've got St. Louis on Tuesday night. That's where Thatcher Demko makes his season debut for the Canucks. It's funny. I've seen a few people on Twitter talking about this as well. Vancouver's record has them in a playoff spot, so on and so forth. But they have not necessarily beaten a lot of heavyweights in this league, have they?
Well, no, they haven't. And now, look, the glass half full is, I think you have to give Rick Tocchet a tremendous amount of credit. You know, when you think about the fact they haven't had their number one goalie, they've missed Miller for, you know, a significant period of time, missed Brock Besser for a period of time, they've been banged up on the blue line, and here they are, you know, in a playoff spot. And then, you know, you take a look at what they've done on the road and how remarkable that has been. At home, yeah, the thing with Vancouver, you know, Pat, they've lost every home game when they've been the home underdog. And just to take it, you know, even if you don't want to look at, okay, what's he talking about betting for? The reason I bring it up is that if you're perceived to be the home underdog, you're also perceived to be the inferior team. So if you're losing the games that you're considered to be the inferior team, their four wins have come as a home favorite this year. So I think it's been Calgary, it's Pittsburgh, I think it's Chicago, and Columbus. I think those are their four wins on home ice. And that's when they were the betting favorite in games. So the games that they're considered to be the team that should win the game, they've won. The games where they're not considered to be the team that should win, they've lost.
Like the game that just played against Tampa Bay, for instance, right?
Correct. There's another. And, you know, there's a game where, I mean, that was a fun game to watch, but, man, you had a great spot if you were Vancouver. You know, they lose Cirelli, they lose Cernak, so they're down to 5D and 11 forwards. But they, you know, Vancouver just couldn't stay out of the box that game, and taking a too many men penalty late in the game, their fourth penalty of the game, you know, just bit them.
Last one on the Canucks, and we talk about their home road splits. How about Jake DeBrusk and his home road splits?
Well, you see, if you want to figure out why the Canucks can't win at home, you can blame Jake DeBrusk.
Huh.
You know, 11 of his 12 goals he has scored on the road. He just scored his first home goal. It was Friday night in that Columbus game. So, yeah, blame DeBrusk for their struggles at home.
Let's move to Edmonton. The Oilers are in a playoff spot, and they're playing much better hockey, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and the two stars are on a roll. I mean, Connor's come back from injury, you know, he's got 14 games are multi-point games. He's got 12 points in his last six games. Leon's had, I think, four multi-point games in his last six. So they're getting, you know, the stars are picking it up. Zach Hyman has started to score in the last couple of games. And then Stuart Skinner, you know, doesn't look like a guy by any stretch of the imagination who's pouting since not being named one of the starters for Team Canada at the Four Nations. It's what, I think it's 4-1 or 3-0-1, you know, and with a sub 2 goals against average and a 940, 950 save percentage. So, hey, it's all about stopping the puck, and they're getting saves where, hey, you know, that's what was the Elaine Vigneault line that you know, I think you've probably heard before, my goalie's better than yours, I win, your goalie's better than mine, you win. Well, Stuart Skinner's been better than the opposition goalie more times than not of late, and the Edmonton Oilers are winning hockey games. And to think, actually, Pat, the one loss that he had, that was the 1-0 loss to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Right, which is gives you a pretty good idea that he's been much better of late.
Need your team to score a goal for you to win. Yeah. You know, it kind of helps.
I would imagine most coaches would say you give up one, you should win. So they just didn't on that particular night. We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He's our Pacific Division insider, NHL Network, VSiN Sports. Go rapid fire through a few more teams in the division, starting in Seattle. They are, we don't have to go too rapid, but just a little bit less in depth on these ones. But sure. Seattle, much better with Vince Dunn finally back in the lineup, hey?
Yeah, so a couple key points with Seattle. One, Vince Dunn back in the lineup. He's been back for five games, I think it is. You know, he's got 9 points in nine games this year. With Dunn in the lineup, they're 6-3. So I didn't realize how big a difference he has made. But talking to, you know, a couple of people who work for the team, they're saying, you know, it's just really helped the transition game. You know, this is the guy that anchored the power play last year. He and Montour sharing time this year. A couple other key factors. Shane Wright, since his bench, I think it's something like six goals in eight games. And, you know, Dan Bylsma, their coach, decided to shake the lines up a couple of games ago. Well, the one line he didn't shake up was the line of Wright, Oliver Bjorkstrand, and Ellie Tolvanen. And all they did against the Rangers was put up 9 points. So there, you know, there's a group that's in the bottom, you know, half, you know, it's kind of like your third line, I think, on paper. But, you know, they've been waiting for Shane Wright. Maybe, you know, now he's found his time.
In Anaheim, two big topics. First of all, the Jacob Trouba trade. They acquired Trouba in that very much ballyhooed deal with the New York Rangers. I'm just curious, and now we've seen him make his debut, maybe on both runs, what we saw from Trouba in his debut and also the saga that led to him being a member of the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, look, I thought he looked good last night. You know, and And with him and Gudas, I think it's given, you know, we had the Bash brothers, you know, with Canseco and Mark McGwire back in the days, you know, when they were with the A's. I think we may have the new Bash brothers on the blue line, potentially with Gudas and Jacob Trouba. That's a lot of size and nastiness back there. And I think that that's something that Anaheim's been looking for. They just need a little. They do get pushed around. They're struggling to score goals. It's been terrible. It's two goals or less, like the last six or seven games, and makes it really hard to win. It's crazy. That overtime game last night against Montreal was an absolute yawn fest. Pat, I think. Well, I know that the Ducks didn't have any shots on goal. The Canadians had four. But here's the stat, Pat, that blows me away. The Anaheim Ducks are the only team in the NHL that has yet to trail on the road after 20 minutes.
Interesting. See?
There's more. And their numbers, you know, I think they're 5-6 on the road this year.
Huh. But I'm just
like of all teams.
I'm just more impressed like the second iteration of the Bash brothers for the Mighty Ducks. I mean, obviously, yeah. Fulton Reed and Dean Portman in D2, the Mighty Ducks, the first iteration of the Bash brothers. But you have to be a certain vintage to understand that reference. Yeah. If you don't, that's okay.
Go YouTube it, right?
the other big Anaheim issue, what's going on with Trevor Zegras and his knee injury that he sustained a little less than a week ago?
Yeah, I mean, I saw this report from Frank Cervelli that he's going to get a second opinion and, you know, we'll have some more news in about 24 to 48 hours is what Frank was saying. You know, a tough blow for Zegras at any time, but, you know, and any player. But, you know, here's Zegras who looked like he was starting to turn the corner and now a setback. And so, you know, you're missing Zegras. Leo Carlson's also been out for a while. They're expecting him to come back at some point on the road trip, but you know, for a team that is struggling to score, and especially to have, you know, Carlson, who, I mean, it's a big body down the middle, and he's looked really good in his, you know, in his couple of years here in the NHL. But that's another guy that they would love to get back mm-hmm. in the lineup.
And let's wrap on San Jose, JD, a Sharks team that has given up a lot of goals of late, but they are getting lots from their number one overall pick, Macklin Celebrini.
I mean, look, Celebrini is what, second in scoring amongst rookies. Now they announced today they activated Barkley Goodrow, and in a corresponding move they put Will Smith on IR. And Smith has actually had a nice little run of late, so that is unfortunate for both Smith and the San Jose Sharks. But Pat, they're going into Carolina tonight, and the Carolina Hurricanes are a -550 favorite. I'm that's insulting. Like that's just Carolina's good. But I'm sorry, no one in the NHL should be that big of a favorite. I feel really bad. You know, that's just very telling. But, yeah, I know, look, Celebrini, fifth, you know, he's fifth overall in rookie scoring. And, you know, they struggled in Florida and Tampa. You know, they're going to have to play against a tough, you know, Celebrini faces a tough Carolina team, who I'm sure is going to be a little ornery after, you know, what they've been going through the last couple of games. So, but this, yeah, it'll be another test for the Sharks, but look, they found a way. For me, you know, the other thing with San Jose is that I understand, you know, look, they know they're years away from being a playoff team, but the one thing that's kept them in games and allowed them to steal some games is the goaltending of Mackenzie Blackwood. And
yeah.
I do wonder how, you know, now you've got, you know, Anonin, Gorgiev, you know, and Vanacek are your goalies, and we'll see what and Askarov. So it's a lot to ask, and I do wonder, you know, how that could impact this team, because wins have been tough to come by mm-hmm. outside of Mackenzie Blackwood.
Absolutely. Great stuff as always, JD. Appreciate the time. We will do it again next week, a spin around the Pacific Division, but lots of stuff to get to on this week's. Great insight as always. Thank you, pal.
Enjoy tonight, the team who can't win on the road against the team that can't win anywhere.
Yeah. Seems like a must-see game. Thanks, JD.
100%. All right, bud.
You too, pal. Jonathan Davis of NHL Network and VSiN Sports joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and deliveries available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Shan Vergy and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.